Hello, blind cool tech. It is. What time is it? Let's find out, actually. Okay, so it's just after 6 in the evening in Idaho time anyway, on April 12th, 2009, and I'm talking like I'm British, which I'm not. I don't know why I'm doing it, but I am, probably just because I feel like it. And I'm going to have to shoo the cat off of the table. yes, I do have a cat, folks, so you may hear him during this podcast, which, for anyone who's curious, is being recorded on the Victor Reader stream. with that, all that said, all the, formalities and things out of the way, we can get on to the subject of this podcast. Which, excuse me, you're probably wondering what the subject of this podcast is. And, well, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you. This podcast is going to be about the theremin, which, for those who don't know, is one of the oldest electronic instruments in existence, and the only one that is played without actually being touched. And I will get to that in a little while. but I figure I'm gonna have to give you some background information, and since it takes about 15 to, 10, 15, 20 minutes even for the theremin to warm up, anyway, this would be the ideal time to do this. so the theremin, and I should say I am in no way a virtuoso in this instrument yet. I've only had it for a few months, but I figured I'd still do a podcast on it, and I figure as I learn, anyone who's interested could learn with me. I plan to do more podcasts on this as I get better. And I'll point out a few resources that you can use if you're curious, to learn more about this fascinating instrument. Excuse me. So the theremin. Actually, I think I'm gonna grab a Pepsi while I'm thinking about it. So, the Pepsi. Come on. Yeah. It's little 8 10-ounce bottles. And keep the cap. Okay, anyway, the theremin. Getting back to the subject here. As I said, like I said, it's the oldest, or one of the oldest electronic instruments in existence, if not the oldest. And as I said before, the only instrument in existence, electronic or otherwise, that is played without some form of physical contact from the player, which in this case is called a thereminist. I mean, you have a guitarist and you have a pianist, so why not a thereminist? the theremin was actually invented, I believe, around 1919 by a Russian government researcher, I believe, by the name of, and I'll use his American name because I am generally not good with pronouncing Russian names and I would probably mangle it. His name was Leon Theremin, strangely enough. And he was, like I said, he was basically a government researcher, and they were looking into the concept of proximity sensors for things like military bases and things of that nature. So the idea, obviously, being that the closer a threat became to the base, the louder the sound that the security system would produce. And in the course of his research, the Bolshevik, well, Theremin, I think, must have realized the musical potential of his creation, and he started teaching lessons, and the leader of the Bolsheviks at the time, Vladimir Lenin, was also very intrigued by what he heard, and he took lessons, and so Theremin started teaching, his instrument, which was called the Theremin Vox back then, or sometimes the etherphone, in Russia at first, and then as time got on and it became more popular and more people found out about it, he expanded his travels to other countries, and eventually the theremin came over to the US. Now Theremin's no longer with us. I believe he died in 1993, as did his greatest, or one of his greatest apprentices, students, if you will, Clara Rockmore. I think she died more recently, or maybe she died before he did. I don't remember all the details, but his other really well-known, at least that I know of, student was his grandniece, Lydia Kavina, I believe is how you pronounce it, although Eloquence pronounces it Kavina, Kavina, if you're remotely curious, and she's still around. I think she's 42, 43, and she gives theremin performances and has put out some albums of theremin music, and I believe she also teaches the instrument. And the theremin is most commonly associated with sci-fi and horror soundtracks because it makes a very eerie sound, although it is actually quite a beautiful sound, actually, if the instrument is played properly, which I am nowhere near that point. I do intend to kind of give you some demonstrations, but these days I tend to sound like a cat fight in a sewer pipe, so I will warn you, it may be painful. So, anyway, the theremin, and so yeah, it's been used in a lot of sci-fi films and things like that because of the sound it makes. Now, the best, or the most common way, I should say, that I have heard the theremin's sound described is that it sounds like a human voice humming. And when you get higher up into the pitch register, it actually sounds like a opera singer. And yes, folks, right now the theremin is in front of me. And it is on, as is the amplifier. The reason you're not hearing it is because I have it in, for lack of a better term, standby mode. And again, I'll describe all of this. Matter of fact, I think it's time that we get to the description of this particular theremin, because theremins come in many shapes and sizes. The basic description of a theremin is it has two antennae, which are metal, obviously, one on the left side and one on the right side, and usually the right antenna controls the pitch, or if you want to get technical about it, the frequency of the sound, and the left controls the volume or amplitude, and that is what a theremin generally looks like. Obviously, there are different models, some of which don't even use one of the two antennas. They don't even have. Some have a pitch antenna, another one has a volume, but a volume knob, or others have a pitch knob and a volume antenna, and it really depends. The one I have is the Moog, which is Moog, incidentally, which is the company that makes it, Moog Music, founded by the late Robert Moog, who was also associated with Leon Theremin, incidentally, and his niece, grandniece, whatever you want to call her. This particular theremin is called the Etherwave. It's about 18 inches long. It's a rectangular wooden box. Like I said, it's about 18 inches long, and it's It's a wooden casing, actually, or as it's generally called, a cabinet is what they call it. But like I said, it's just a rectangular wooden casing. The circuit boards and things are inside. Like I said, it's about 18 inches long and maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 inches wide. And it's not very tall at all. This is actually a very small example of a theremin. There are some that are about the size of small filing cabinets. I've never actually seen any that big. This is the only theremin I've ever seen, the one that I own. And so, like I said, this is, 18 inches long, a little more than a foot and a half. Well, about a foot and a half. So, like I said, it's rectangular, and on each end there is a. Well, on the left end, there are two little sockets. And this is where the volume antenna will screw into, because on this model, the antennas are removable, which makes for easy transportation if you were going to give a performance someplace. And there is an optional gig bag, which I also have. And the theremin, like I said, the theremin is assembled in front of me, and it is actually producing a very faint, high-pitched sound because, well, my hand. you might not necessarily be able to hear it. Well, that's actually not correct. The theremin itself has no way of outputting the sound. At least this model doesn't. There may be some that do, I don't know, but this particular model is not, or does not put out its own sound. It has to be hooked up to an amplifier. So, anyway, which it is actually hooked up to an amp in this case, the Moog TB15, which is very small. Okay, so the antennas are hooked up. On the left is the volume antenna. This antenna is a roughly horseshoe-shaped antenna. It obviously curves around, and that's why there's two sockets for it to screw into, because both ends need to screw in. And so it's, like I said, it's a horseshoe-shaped antenna. The back of it is straighter than the front, and it kind of curves around, and then the front kind of curves inward a little bit, well, quite a bit actually, before it screws into the actual theremin. And then on the right side of the theremin, we have the one socket that houses the pitch antenna, which, unlike the volume antenna, is an upright vertical antenna. Now, the way you play the theremin then is you move your hands around in the vicinity of the antennas. And it's actually probably one of the most difficult instruments to learn, let alone master. So I've got my work cut out for me. So, getting back to the description of the theremin, because there is more. On the front of the unit, well, first on the bottom of the unit, it has 2 feet with what almost feels like felt padding on the bottom of them. This is for if you don't have a microphone stand. You can set the theremin on a tabletop, which I have it sitting on my dining room table. Now, there is an adapter on the bottom of this particular model, a little round socket which is how you would screw it onto a microphone stand. I almost say microwave stand for some reason, but it's a microphone stand. And if you were going to perform, that's probably what you would want to do. So, that's the bottom of the unit. Now, on the back of the unit is the receptacle for the power supply, which is one of those big old cube things that, if anyone has seen, like, an old, excuse me, Nintendo Entertainment Center system, or even the Super Nintendo, or even a lot of, like, Casio keyboards, they use those big cubes that would take up an entire electrical outlet unless you plugged it into the bottom socket. This one actually has three prongs on it, like most laptop plugins would. And then the end that actually plugs into the theremin is a big connector with pins in it, like what a computer mouse might have. Although some use USB ports nowadays, but so that's the back of the theremin. Now the front of the theremin is where the few controls are located. On the very left control is the V-shaped rocker switch, which is how you turn the theremin on and off. And that's the cat playing in the bathroom with the door stopper. But anyway, to the right of the power switch is the jack where your patch cord or instrument cord, whatever you decide to call it, will plug into. And it just uses a standard quarter inch, like on an electric guitar. And which is funny, because when I ordered the theremin, I got it from musiciansfriend.com. I ordered it in, God, when was it? February, I believe? Or March, maybe February or March. And I ordered it along with the amplifier, which meant quite a large box that the UPS man had to deliver to my house one afternoon. Unfortunately, I didn't have a patch cord, and I wasn't able to get one for several weeks. I went to a music store finally and got me a 6-foot one. But anyway, so yeah, the theremin, and it is plugged in, like I said. Now, to the left or to the right of the input jack is a rotary knob, which controls the volume setting. This adjusts the responsiveness of the volume antenna. You turn it one way and it will go louder, and another it'll get quieter. Like I said, this just adjusts the volume range that you can get when you start moving your hands in front of the antennas. Which makes sense because the volume antenna is on the left. I kept getting these two confused for a while. Now, to the right of this is the right of the volume knob is a pitch knob. And this is is basically is another is how you tune it, basically. You adjust this and it adjusts the pitch range that you can get when you move your hands. And right now it's set to the far right, which means I will be at the lowest pitch range, which at its very lowest, the theremin actually sounds like someone flatulating. It almost reminds me of that old Atari 2600 game, Space Invaders. If anybody remembers that, it would make that farting noise whenever you lose a life. And sometimes I've accidentally produced that sort of noise while practicing the theremin. So, to the right of the pitch and volume knobs, we have two more. The one on the immediately to the right of the pitch knob is the waveform knob. This just adjusts the timbre, I guess, is the right word to describe it. Just the different characteristics of the sounds. You can have, I really don't know how to describe it. It adjusts the waveform of the audio output. If anybody who understands that better than me will probably. And then to the right, to the far right, we have the brightness control, which is just like on like a stereo where you turn it one way and it kind of deadens the sound. It almost makes it sound more muffled, like you put a pillow over it, and you turn it, to the right, and you get a much brighter sound. And that is what this knob here on the theremin is, the far right. So that is basically the description of the theremin. Now, I should mention the antennas a little more. They respond to certain motions of the hand. They, like the pitch antenna, will respond to I guess horizontal movements of the right hand. You move it back and forth, closer to the and the closer you get to the antenna, the higher the pitch. Now, the volume antenna works on pretty much the opposite principle. The higher the or the closer your hand is to the volume antenna, the quieter the sound becomes. Now the volume antenna, you can move your hands left and right or up and down. I generally actually find that moving my hands up and down when I'm playing actually works better for me. So now you also notice that there is no standby switch on the Etherwave. So when I said it was on standby, you were probably thinking, okay, how do you do that? Well, it's very simple. All you do is cover the volume antenna with something like I'm using right now the pitch or the patch cord, which prevents the theremin from making unintended noise when you're sitting in front of it and you're not trying to. Now, another thing is that they always say you should let your theremin warm up for 15 minutes or so before you start practicing. This is because the way you play it is it produces electromagnetic fields, and that is what that becomes your hum the theremin's human interface, as you move your hands in those magnetic fields, to change the sound and things like that. Well, the problem is that when you first turn your theremin on, those magnetic fields are focused so tightly around the antennas that you really don't have much range. And you can get some really undesirable pitch changes and even volume changes. So they say if you wait 15 minutes or so, this gives them time to kind of loosen up. And so I figured I would leave the theremin on as I did this, and I will try now to demonstrate for you a little bit of how you play this instrument. Again, like I said, I am in no way a master. I'm still very much a novice, but I will try and describe at least what I'm doing. So now I'm standing up. I've been sitting down this whole time, but I'm going to stand up now. And I've got my left hand on the volume antenna, which is why you can't hear much. And I'm going to slowly raise my hand, and I'm going to try and move my right hand as little as possible. Okay. Now I'm going to move my right hand closer. And you hear that the pitch is increasing. Hey, cool, scale. Ah. Whoa. Now I'm moving my hand. Ooh. Moving my right hand. I guess the pitch. Guess that's as low as it's gonna go right at the moment. Oh yeah, maybe I didn't let it warm up. Maybe I just don't have enough space to work with. That could be the part of the problem right there. I really don't have a whole lot of space to work with in here. So I'm going to try that again, see if I can do that scale again. Yeah, not really very good. So I'm gonna fiddle around with the brightness knob or the waveform knob and change the sound a bit. And you can even make like Halloween type noises. Yeah, exactly. The ghost. Yeah. But then you can actually make music, which is what I hope to eventually be able to do. And like I said, I moved my. Now to get to get that kind of trembly, quavery effect, you basically have to move your hands really, 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 fast in front of the antennas. Now, if I adjust the brightness knob, I get a much kind of a much, for lack of a better term, brighter sound, although it is probably quite painful to listen to. So I turn that back, and then I turn the waveform knob all the way to the right again. Makes for a sound less painful in the ears, but you basically, to get that really wacky sound, you basically just shake your hand right in front of the antennas. Now you can do that, get some actual vibrato in your music, and you get more of a pretty. Which I have to work on. Almost had that there, but you can actually get more of a warm, sound to it. Basically, you kind of, I imagine you just move your hands just a little bit, and you have to get that down so you don't actually really change your pitch or anything. But it's, like I said, it's a very hard instrument to play. I'm still working on it, and but it's still, I mean, it's a lot of fun, I mean, you can just, or you can actually try and oops, a little too far. That's one thing that makes this instrument such a difficult one to play, whether you can see or not. Is that you have to really watch how you move your hands, and even your breathing actually can interfere if you're not, I mean, like you wouldn't want to, you wouldn't want to start practicing the theremin immediately after you just come in from running, track and field or anything, and when you're just panting and you wouldn't want to. Or if you were late for your performance, you would actually still want to take the time to. I mean, you'd want to, allow yourself that time to kind of prepare yourself. I mean, but these antennas are so sensitive that even moving a finger can interfere. Yeah, just trying to get that little at the end. Yeah, like I've just been right now working on just maintaining, reaching a pitch and then, maintaining it. Because that's the whole thing. You gotta be able to maintain a certain pitch for however long, depending on what you're trying to play. And, so it's just a matter of getting the motions down to get you, to whatever, like if you're trying to do an actual melody like I was there, even if it was just a simple scale, I figure, get the pitch, work on maintaining a steady pitch first and then try and, make melodies and things like that. And so I've been kind of combining the two. And actually, it's funny because, well, even before I ordered the theremin, because it took about 5 to 6 days to show up once I placed the order, but I was mentally thinking up like favorite songs of mine and adding theremin parts to them, thinking which ones would sound good, with a theremin in them. And I was like, oh, wow. And okay, that's painful. That actually sounds just like feedback. All right, go on. Go on, Max. That's the cat, in case you're wondering. Go. Okay, let's try that again. Okay, let's try it again. Oh, yeah. Oops. 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 I was trying to play taps. Yeah, playing taps on a theremin. Do 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 do. Obviously not ready for that yet. But anyway, I suppose there's really not a whole lot I can discuss more, so I think I'll turn the theremin and the amplifier off. There's not really much more point in practicing, recording the practice, I should say. Oh, and another thing about letting the theremin warm up, and this could be partly where I've been having problems because I've just been getting it out and setting it up and starting to play it. The problem is, you don't, excuse me, you don't give the electromagnetic fields time to expand, really, whatever it is they're supposed to do. And so even a slight hand movement can really it makes it harder to get to the pitch that you want. I mean, there I actually had, some success, even though I still move my hand, too far in some cases, actually in quite a lot of cases, but that's why you practice. But anyway, but yeah, that's another reason why you warm it up, is because you don't That way it makes it a lot easier when you're changing a pitch or whatever you're, but I suppose I can refer you to, which was one of the reasons I did this podcast, is I wanted to give out some information for anybody that's interested in learning, at least learning about this instrument, even if you're not gonna go out and buy one. Although, if you think you can, I'll tell you where you can find one. You can get it from the same site I bought. But there are several websites that I know of. Well, one of them is Wikipedia, obviously. You just type in theremin, which is Therimin, and you can learn about how the theremin came to be and stuff like that, about how to play it. And it was very interesting. I was, like I said, just. But there's a website specifically dedicated to the theremin, and it's called Theremin World. It has a forum which I visit regularly, and the address is www.thereminworld.com. Now, the difference is that they spell theremin with another E. They just put, spell there, Therie, and then put min on the end of it. MIN. So it's Therimin world.com. All one word. And they have forums which are divided into sections. They have a theremin news or newcomers section, which is where I am most of the time. And they have a playing techniques section. And they were actually partly responsible for my deciding to buy a theremin. Because I had asked about if there was any blind people that could. That played the theremin, and they were pretty intrigued about that, and they were very helpful. And so then I told them I went and bought a theremin, and they got all excited. And another website that you can look for is owned by a legally blind gentleman by the name of Thomas Grillo, and his website, I believe, is just HTTP www.thomasgrillo.com, Thomasgrillo.com, one word. And he has some videos where he demonstrates the theremin. And like I said, he's legally blind, and so he was like, yeah, you can play. The only problem with those videos, which you can also find on, well, they're on YouTube. The only problem with them is they're not very blind friendly. I mean, he does talk and tell you kind of what he's doing, but he's not as descriptive as he could be. Although he is actually, I'm told he is actually working on a DVD that will more than make up for this. He's apparently doing a professionally making a DVD, a how-to on how to play the theremin, and he's gonna describe it for anyone who's blind that is actually. But I've spoken to him on YouTube at least several times, even before I got the theremin, and he was, yeah, you can play the theremin. I mean, you're listening to it, which you are. So you can check out YouTube and type in theremin lesson, because he has, I believe, six theremin lesson videos, and they're not, like I said, they're not as descriptive as they could be, but they're still very enjoyable to listen to. Because the way he plays that theremin on those videos, it actually does sound like an opera singer. Only it's not. Well. But yeah, he's very good. And he told me that, because when you first start out, you're going to sound like, well, a cat fight in a sewer pipe, which is pretty much how I sound. Actually, although I'm not as bad as I thought I was going to be. But, excuse me. Yeah, so Wikipedia, Theremin World. Again, that's Therimin World, even though theremin is spelled with an I, not an E. Well, generally, it's spelled Imin, although it's apparently, it has been spelled Emin, or sometimes even Amin. But, and then thomasgrillo.com, or you can just look at his YouTube and watch the videos that way. And like I said, I bought my theremin at www.musiciansfriend.com. they don't have a huge selection, but they have the Ether Wave. Now, I should tell you though, if you're blind, you should get the assembled Ether Wave. And you'll know because, I mean, because you can buy it from a kit where the circuit board's already assembled, but the problem with that is you have to be able to do some, you have to be able to solder. So you would need sighted help for that. Now, you'll know which one you're getting because it will say Moog Etherwave Theremin Kit versus just the Moog Etherwave Theremin, which means it's already assembled, which mine was. And incidentally, the casing, or the cabinet as they call it, on mine anyway, is made of, I believe it's ash, that's what it said in the description. And these are furniture grade hardwood casings or cabinets. And the Etherwave, I don't know about others, but I imagine there are others, but the Etherwave includes not only the power supply and the antennas, obviously, but it also includes a DVD with two videos. One is a tutorial with Lydia Kavanagh, which contains six brief lessons on playing the theremin. Granted, they're very visual, but they're still fun to listen to because you do get to hear her play. For instance, I never would have thought you could play Greensleeves on a theremin, although it is oddly fitting given the sound of the theremin. You do get to hear her play a little piece of Greensleeves, actually. And then the other video on this DVD is it's Clara Rockmore, the world's greatest theremin virtuosa, and she also does some playing. You get to hear her. It's not like necessarily a teaching video the way Lydia Kavanagh's is, but she does kind of talk a little bit about how she's doing it. And but like I said, you hear her play more than. But like I said, it's still very fascinating. So yeah, it was definitely not a waste of my time as far as I'm concerned. Like I said, it would just be a lot easier if I had a place in my apartment where I could leave it set up permanently, because right now I can't do that. Which makes it kind of hard sometimes to get out and practice as much as I should, but that is one of my goals, is to try and get better at that. But anyway, I'm gonna go ahead and end this podcast for now. But if you would like to contact me, you can do so by writing to B-Peterson, B as in Brian, and that's Bryan, just so you know. B-Peterson@hotmail.com. If you have questions, suggestions, comments, things like that, feel free to send them on over. And with that said, I will be signing off, and I hope to see you next podcast.